You like Huey Lewis in the news?
They're okay.
Their early work was a little too new wave for my taste. But when Sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically. The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost. He's been compared to Elvis Costello, but I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor.
Hey, Albert.
Yes, Alan?
Why are there copies of the style section all over the place? Do you have a dog? A little chow or something?
No, Alan.
Is that a raincoat?
Yes, it is. In 87, Huey released this. Their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics. But they should, because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself. Hey, Paul!
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Jack, I think I did pretty well in my tests. You may shake my hand if you like.
Well, under the circumstances, I'd rather not.
Eh?
Mr. Burns, I'm afraid you are the sickest man in the United States. You have everything.
You mean I have pneumonia?
Yes.
Juvenile diabetes?
Yes.
Hysterical pregnancy?
A little bit, yes. You also have several diseases that have just been discovered in you.
I see. You sure you just haven't made thousands of mistakes?
No, I'm afraid not.
This sounds like bad news.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Is it so wrong to laugh so thoroughly at a brutal murder scene?
You're supposed to laugh at that scene. You're supposed to laugh at that whole movie.
Oh, God. My favorite part is easily... That was from American Psycho, the first thing you heard. And he goes into the bathroom to get his plastic smock, and he takes a drink of water, just looks at himself dead serious in the mirror, and you see the pills on the counter, and then he walks right out, and he's back into the whole spiel about Hip to Be Square.
Yeah. Masterful performance. That was his real breakout role, Christian Bale.
Yeah, and Jared Leto as Paul Allen.
Yeah.
Leto is... The lead singer in one of my favorite bands right now, 30 Seconds to Mars.
He's crazy. He was good in that movie about the guy that shot John Lennon.
Oh, was he in that? I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was. And he put on like 40 pounds for it.
Jeez.
Yeah, it looked just like him.
And he gets the shit kicked out of him in Fight Club, Jared
Leto.
Yeah,
he does. Until his face is ugly.
Yeah. God.
Jared Leto. You ever see that movie he was in with Danny Glover called Switchback?
No.
Oh, that's a fucking great movie.
He's got
He's
got a huge, huge filmography. I mean, he's been in everything. He's been in a couple of Fincher movies. He was in Fight Club, and then he was in Panic Room.
Yep.
And he's almost like, I want to say he's almost in all of Fincher's movies.
I haven't seen him in a while. It's like he disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
But he's really good in that movie, Switchback. Yeah, check that out.
Well, we were talking right before we started the show. You haven't seen the Martin Bashir Hour on MSNBC.
No.
It's literally the worst thing they've ever done.
Oh, my.
I mean, they've done a lot of bad, bad stuff. I think Tucker Carlson had an hour on MSNBC at one point.
Yeah.
But this is brutal to watch. It's painfully boring. Painfully boring.
Is it political?
It is a little bit. But it's mostly, you know, Martin Bashir is like almost like a tabloid journalist.
Yeah.
I mean, he famously interviewed Michael Jackson, that big extended Michael Jackson interview where Jackson was denying that he had plastic surgery other than maybe a nose job, one nose job or some bullshit like that. Went to the store shopping with Michael Jackson and things like
that. Yeah, in Vegas. Yeah. He's like, oh, I need one of these. It's like $90,000 is a fucking giant ceramic tiger or something. They're like, Michael, why don't you pick up a couple of those?
And Bashir is totally, throughout the whole Michael Jackson thing, he's totally serious, like stone cold serious.
Yeah. And, you know, they cut to him and it's all gauzy and he's nodding his head, mm-hmm. you know, very seriously. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, somehow someone at Phil Griffin or Steve Campos gave Martin Bashir his own hour on MSNBC, sort of in the middle of the day. Somewhere between the black hole that is the Andrea Mitchell show.
Oh, my God. She is such a fucking train wreck.
Yeah.
What is wrong with that woman?
She can't read.
I just had it on for like 10 minutes the other day while I was doing something. And she was trying to – she was just trying to do just a basic segue into somebody, you know, a talking head on Capitol Hill talking about the whole Steve King thing. And she could not even get through that intro.
No.
She could just – I was like, geez, spit it out, Andrea. What the fuck?
She is one of the most she's one of the most respected journalists in Washington as far as that whole clique goes. But she cannot – for the life of her, cannot read a prompter. She just stumbles and with the pregnant pauses, and she's stammering over herself. Then she's got this big, like this big labored, like Darth Vader breathing going on, like she's suffering the end stages of COPD or emphysema or something like that. And it's just, I don't know who decided that we're going to put her behind an anchor desk when normally what she does is reporting and covering from the field where maybe she can, you know, rehearse a couple of times what she's going to say. They throw her behind a desk to read prompters and conduct interviews. And she's completely out of her depth. I mean, completely incompetent. I mean, I'm talking about like local sportscaster incompetent, like boom goes the dynamite incompetent.
Yeah. I had never seen anything like it. And I'm so used to quality reporting coming out of her head from, you know, when she was a White House correspondent, whatever she used to do. And now it's just like a deer in the headlights. It's like in her face. She looks like she knows that she's just sucking all the air out of the room. People are just going, oh, Christ.
Yeah.
Can't believe she's got her own show.
And she's not getting any better. She's just not getting better. I mean,
she's like Barbara Harrison on Channel 4 and WRC in D.C. Worst goddamn anchor I've ever seen. I watched her for 18 years, and she never gets better.
Yeah.
If you did a drinking game where you slugged one every time Barbara Harrison stepped on something in a segment, you'd be drunker than fuck before the first commercial break. She's so bad. And she's been there forever.
Yeah.
Duh.
Someone needs to compile like an Andrea Mitchell best of reel and put it on YouTube.
It'd be nothing but that wouldn't be hard to do.
Yeah, but then Martin Bashir gets his own hour now, as if that isn't bad enough. I mean, Andrea Mitchell's been on for 6 months and hasn't gotten any better. Martin Bashir, right out of the gate, is just terrible, boring, and he's slow and super serious. And the problem is, and there's nothing wrong with being, you know, kind of boring. If you're going to be wonky about it, if you're going to be boring, present some solid, hardcore, deep wonk that we can at least sink our teeth into and say, you know what? This is really fucking boring, but at least we're learning something. But Martin Bashir is boring with tabloid stories, like he did Justin Bieber today. And there was a thing about Justin Bieber, and of course it's been Martin Sheen around the clock. I mean, Charlie Sheen. Yeah. You know what's pissing me off about that?
No.
Is the fact that, you know, it's this ongoing train wreck with Charlie Sheen, but everyone is forgetting to mention that the guy beats women, that he's a misogynistic thug. And so therefore everyone's getting all wrapped up. Everyone's following him on Twitter. It's just this big spectacle. That, oh boy, what's Martin in the Ustream? He's got a Ustream show now in which he rants and raves and snorts.
He looks like fucking death.
Yeah, he really does. Really does.
Terrifying.
I mean, what could
he just don't want him to get that stink on President Bartlett.
Right.
They're going to like retroactively impeach President Bartlett over this.
Yeah.
Do you see that? It's hard to believe that they're from the same gene pool.
Yeah, it really is. Really is. And I think Emilio Estevez.
Where the hell is Emilio in all this? That's what I want.
Well, I mean, he's trying to do behind the scenes stuff. I think he directed that RFK movie a while back, and you know, he's keeping a low profile. I don't know if he's. I mean, he's really sort of the heir to the Martin Sheen throne, really.
Yeah.
Did you see that 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 item in that Chinese website, that news item, where they thought
his father, who was president,
right? The guy thought that Martin Sheen really was a president.
When I saw that, it reminded me of Galaxy Quest. It's like this. It's like the society of people who watch our transmissions and think that the Bartlett White House was real.
But seriously, before we're, you know, raising this guy up to sort of tabloid celebrity super status, and we got to realize that he beats women. He's not a fun guy. No. He's a terrible, terrible man. Terrible man. Terrible.
I don't know if too many people who are following him out of reverence or some sort of, you know, fanboy love. I think it's really just it's like, you know, looking out the window next when you're going past a car accident.
Yeah, but what it does is, you know, all of those followers and all the people watching him on Ustream just kind of reinforces his mania, you know, because all publicity is good publicity out there.
Yeah, well, that's true. I really think this ends with one of those Ustream broadcasts of where he puts a fucking shotgun in his mouth, though. I really think this doesn't end well.
Yeah, it's like Russian roulette, and he's just there with a
hit him out
with a revolver and spinning the barrel and putting it in his mouth, sort of like Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon sitting there on the couch.
Yeah, chewing on the 9mm.
Right.
That'd be fun. I'd pay to see that. I'd pay some pretty top premium pay-per-view dollars to see Charlie Sheen put a bullet through the back of his head.
You know, and what's the crazy thing is it's the worst goddamn show in the world. I mean, it's awful. I mean, talk about emblematic of being, you know, the decline of the American sitcom.
Oh, Two and a Half Men?
Yeah.
I've never seen a single episode of that.
I've seen one episode.
I refuse to. I mean, I've detested Charlie Sheen forever. I mean, I would not. I love John Cryer, and I hear it's a great show, but I just want nothing to do with it. It does not appeal to me at all.
It's not a great show. It's not even funny. It's not. There's nothing clever or interesting about it. I mean, if you compare to the sort of the sitcoms that we came of age watching, Cheers, you know, Night Court,
Cosby Show,
Family Ties, Seinfeld, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I mean. You talk about sitcoms that weren't just funny, but they were compelling and interesting with great characters and great chemistry between the characters. I mean, we've been watching Cheers here every night, you know, like maybe, you know, like a marathon of maybe an hour and a half, like three episodes of Cheers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's staggering how brutally entertaining it is.
Yeah,
I mean
episode. I mean, there's not a bad one in that bunch,
right? And no matter which character they focus on for that episode, it's still great. If they focus on Cliff Clavin, still great. They're focusing on Norm, great. Woody, great. You know, it doesn't always need to focus on the main character to be great. And then you just have you fast forward to today with, you know, Two and a Half Men and just this other crap like Shit My Dad Says. And it's just so, you know, add water and serve boring template comedy writing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not character driven. It's really literally situation comedy.
So all of this hoo-ha, I mean, you know, you wish it was over a show like Seinfeld or Cheers or you know, some of the great dramatic series of our time, Deadwood or something like that, where, you know, it's all about artistic integrity and shit. Like, this is about the worst sitcom in the history of sitcoms that somehow miraculously has appealed to enough people to stay on the air for 8 years.
Yeah.
And damn me for knowing that it's been on for 8 years. As you know, as I'm sure you're aware at this point, they passed that bill last night, that union-busting bill.
Yeah, good.
What they did was they tore all of the fiscal stuff out of it, so they didn't need a quorum to pass the vote, right? So they end up passing it 18-1 without any of the Democrats, any of the 14 Democrats present. One of the Republicans voted no. So, I mean, this raises a good series of questions, which is, you know, Scott Walker's been saying all along that the bill's all about, you know,
fiscal responsibility,
and that there were serious budgetary implications in this bill. And so that's why it was so important. But because there were fiscal things in the bill, he needed a quorum.
Yeah.
So they take it all out. Yeah. So they don't
no
need
longer
a quorum.
About fiscal things now.
So it's not about fiscal things anymore.
Yeah. It's going to be the biggest someday historians are going to look back at that douche and they're going to shake their heads and go, "Well, that was the end of the Republican Party's war on unions." It's going to backlash on them politically so hard.
Yeah.
They just rallied the shit out of the Democratic base, I think, to back to Democratic support of unions. It's just going to backfire all everything they do. They're just so stupid. They're so got their heads up their asses. They have no idea what they're doing. They elect these fucking retards.
Yeah. I mean, if there's probably, pretty solid through line for this week's show, because it's all circles back to this sort of example.
Yeah.
Where it's the Tea Party Republicans just simply playing grab ass with government.
Yeah, exactly. Amateurs.
Yeah.
Amateurs. It reminds me of the speech that Christopher Reeve's character makes in Remains of the Day, where he stands up in front of all these, British fops who are kissing ass to the, with the Nazis. And he's like, "Look, the time for amateur politics is over. You're fucking around. You don't know what you're doing. It's time for, real politic. It's time for the professionals." And right. He toasts himself. I love that. To the professionals, basically meaning me, himself. That's what it feels like. It's just a bunch of amateurs playing grab ass. You're exactly right. Yeah. Grab ass is right.
Yeah.
And so fucking douches that don't know what they're doing. They just basically just read, Government for Dummies. Three houses, the three branches of government, duh. And they, unions, that sounded bad. Let's bust some unions.
Yeah.
It's just going to backfire all over them. I love it. I love it. The more radical, the better. More radical, the better. This election in 2012 is going to make Johnson v. Goldwater look like fucking Rocky One. I mean, I can't wait. I was doing some research the other day, and the number of Republicans who came over, who would have come over to JFK in 64 had he made it, was staggering. They were playing to this middle moderate base. I mean, Kennedy was no kind of liberal. He was no kind of liberal at all. And it's mostly because he had to deal with these cock blockers in the South.
That's
because
right.
The South, the seniority system, the South had Congress just fucking headlocked and had since the 1860s. But the number of moderate Republicans that were mortified at Goldwater, that were absolutely terrified of his reactionary, scary, radicalism. Kennedy and Johnson ultimately did in 64 picked up just states and Republicans that you never would have imagined voting for a Democrat. That's going to happen now. They're just going to become more and more radicalized, and the primaries are going to shake out. The primaries are going to be a bloodbath. Some one side or the other is going to get their asses handed to them in the primaries for the Republicans. Either the crazy evangelical lunatic radical meat-eating fringe or the moderate Romney hairdo fringe. One or the other of those is going to get their ass handed to them.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to make the disunity of the Democrats in 2008 look like, like the biggest love fest circle jerk you've ever seen.
Well, here's the difference between what we're looking at now and even the Republican Party of Barry Goldwater in 1964.
Yeah.
With the Tea Party, the Republicans used to, when they would get into office and take control over the government or Congress, they would actually just pump the wrong blood type into the system, into the bloodstream of America. It was just the wrong blood type. It wasn't, but it was still blood. But what the Tea Party Republicans are doing are, they're not even pumping blood into the system. They're pumping horse shit into the system. I mean, they're pumping like fudge or detergent, or they don't know what the hell they're pumping into the system. What they're doing is they're translating all of their myopic bullshit into actually governing. And so what you get is you get ridiculousness like Scott Walker. Yeah. And then we've got the rest of the show to go through the laundry list of the other things.
Yeah,
it's because now
the douchebag in Florida that wants to give back, high speed rail money.
Yeah,
because we don't want any of that fucking high speed rail when gas is $3.60 a gallon.
That's right.
No.
Here's the Christopher Reeve speech in Remains of the Day.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States doesn't want war any more than you do.
On the other hand, neither would we care for peace at any price, because some prices, you may find, are too outrageously high to pay. But let's not get into that now. We may all have to soon enough. For the moment, let us simply raise our glasses to Lord Darlington in gratitude for his magnificent hospitality.
Edward Fox.
Lord Darlington is a classic English gentleman of the old school. Decent and honorable and well-meaning. So are all of you here, all decent and honorable and well-meaning gentlemen. It's been a pleasure and a privilege for me to visit with you here. But? Excuse me, I have to say this. You are...
all of you.
Amateurs. And international affairs should never be run by gentlemen amateurs. Do you have any idea of what sort of a place the world is becoming all around you? The days when you could just act out of your noble instincts are over. Europe has become the arena of realpolitik, the politics of reality. If you like, real politics. And what you need is not gentlemen politicians, but real ones. You need professionals to run your affairs, or you're headed for disaster. So I propose a toast, gentlemen, to the professionals.
And everybody's just sitting around looking like they just smelled the biggest turd. You know, looking like Stevens just came in and served him a big shit pie.
That's so
great. Oh, you dick. Because that's like the biggest breach of... I mean, the entire movie is all about decorum. I mean, it's all about manners. It's a study of manners and British culture and how the Brits are just so fucking constipated. And but yet there's a subplot where Darlington's just this fucking appeaser, this Nazi ass kisser. And there's a brutal scene where the Nazis come to visit and they're looking at the artwork. And the one Nazi's like, oh, this is particularly fine. And the other guy's like, yeah, write that one down. We're going to steal that fucker when we move in. Yeah. And then you just kind of get a chill. But it's just such a great scene. The guy just got these huge balls to get up in front of all these British fops and tell them that they're just jackasses. You know.
Well, yeah, and my sincere hope here is that enough independents will begin to recognize all of this ridiculousness from the Tea Party Republicans in time enough to get them the hell out.
Oh, yeah.
Before
it's already starting to happen.
Because, as you know, you pump horseshit into the bloodstream of anything, and it's going to break it. It will break. Yeah. Your body will break if you pump anything other than blood into your own bloodstream. And so... That's what these guys are doing. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're flailing. It's an ongoing Three Stooges sketch. And what's hilarious now to watch is watching all of the so-called serious Republicans absorbing all of this and starting to play along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's Newt Gingrich or Chris Christie, who's been lying out his ass and still considered very serious by the press. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, the bar is set so low on that now. I mean, for Republican seriousness. I mean, that's why this president is just, with his very, very long game, is just running circles around them all. Because, I mean, he's, like we said, you know, he's playing three-dimensional Vulcan chess, and they're playing the game where you throw your poop on the wall.
Right.
You know, it's just no contest. And the independents will start shifting when they see just the end result of this very not serious. I mean, imagine if that witch dumbass had been elected. I mean, we'd literally have, you know, Congress filled with just retards. I mean, just actual living, breathing retards.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's the meme that Sarah Palin runs on, the whole, you know, well, gosh darn it, a mom is the best multitasker in the world. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
To be president?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. There's a mom in my town that beats the shit out of her kids and set her own house on fire. It didn't make her automatically qualified to be president.
Yeah.
You dumbass. Mm-hmm. And where was Sarah Palin this week telling Schiller or Schiffer, whatever the fuck at NPR, to reload, to don't run, reload. Well, your First Amendment rights were violated there, NPR. What the fuck? Where is she on that?
Did she say reload, really, again?
She did when she sent a tweet to fucking Dr. Laura when she got booed
saying
the N-word 7,000 times.
Yeah, but
she said, don't retreat, reload. Yeah. Because, you know, Dr. Laura's First Amendment rights were.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
She spoke her mind and she got fired. But so where is Sarah Palin on that?
Yeah.
With the NPR thing.
That's right. Nothing. Nothing to say about Shiller. Yeah.
No. Nothing. Dumbass.
Because she has no idea about the Constitution. I wrote about this last week. She has she's fucking clueless repeatedly about what's in the Constitution. I mean, the absolute shortest sections, the easiest to read, the most popular sections of the Constitution. She doesn't know. She just doesn't know. And when
she doesn't know.
You know, when people make a big deal about her not knowing publicly, you know, she doesn't correct herself. She just keeps going.
Yeah, digs a deeper hole. Everybody's against her.
It's idiot strength is what it is.
Yeah.
She's so dumb, she just thinks she's ever powerful.
Right.
I mean, here was this week. I mean, talk about dumb. We'll talk about this cavalcade of wingnuttery that's the Republican Party. I mean, this is Sarah Palin this week.
Is this the thing she did with BBC?
The president weigh in on all this. We saw him kind of testing the waters. He was on kind of thin ice, like the thin ice we see out there in Alaska behind you. He was on thin ice when he was going into talking about what was happening in Wisconsin, immediately criticized for doing so. Is there any role for the president to be talking about all these issues, whether it's the states dealing with public sector unions or private sector unions?
Well, see, because our president is so inexperienced in the private sector and in government and in actually running anything or making any kind of budget, that inexperience is really made manifest in some of the statements he makes. So I was trying to
What the hell was that?
Word salad.
Yeah. Made manifest in some of the mistakes that he makes.
And he's so inexperienced. He's only been president for, you know.
Yeah.
He's so inexperienced.
But the sentence,
the greatest presidential campaign of all time, basically, he still doesn't know how to run anything.
But the sentence itself, good God!
Conjugate a verb in there, Sarah.
See, because our president is so inexperienced in the private sector and in government and in actually running anything and making any kind of budget, that experience has really made manifest in some of the statements he makes.
Mm-hmm. No, that. That's no kind of sense.
I tweeted that. I said, you know, if there's got to be a linguist, here's Twitter in action. Try to get a linguistics expert to diagram that sentence.
Yeah.
It just can't be done.
Somebody get me a Venn diagram.
See, because our president is so inexperienced in the private sector and in government and in actually running anything and making any kind of budget, that inexperience has really made manifest in some of the statements he makes.
That's one sentence. Those punches just aren't landing anymore. That's 2008 campaign language. Yeah. You know, none of that is landing. Nobody in their right mind thinks Obama is incompetent or you know, a bad manager of people or mm-hmm. you know, inexperienced. I mean, he's president. What do you want? What do you mean?
Yeah,
he's been doing it and fairly successfully by most standards. So that's campaign language.
Yeah.
It's like she's gearing up. She's getting in that brain set, you know, to go back and get her old 2008 notebook out, her Snoopy notebook that she wrote all her little zingers in. And, you know, she's getting ready to rock again. 2012 is coming up. She's got to dig out her old campaign notebooks.
Yeah.
None of those punches are landing, so fuck her.
If only it was as good as campaign language. It's actually nonsense language. It's actually speaking in tongues in some way. But she throws enough proper nouns in there to make it, you know, you can kind of tell what she's talking about. You just don't have no idea why she's saying it or what she's saying.
What point she's trying to make. I mean, he asked a very straightforward question. Basically what the question boiled down to was the, you know, federal intervention in states' rights, basically, is, you know, does the federal government have a role in dictating, you know, how a state deals with its, you know, own budget, its own people. But she can't answer that question. She doesn't know. She just doesn't know.
She doesn't.
She doesn't know about state versus federal and blah, blah, blah. So she just got to, well, let me look at my soundbite word salad here.
I love how we hear that he's inexperienced, though, from someone who only spent half a term as governor. And then, you know, repeatedly. Yeah, this is the same with what she did with Supreme Court last week. Repeatedly just fucks up basic knowledge.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's telling a constitutional scholar and 8 of the 9 justices on the Supreme Court what for about the Constitution.
Yeah. She's so scary smart.
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's the bottom of the hour. Maybe we need to run a Bubble Genius commercial.
Yeah, you know what? They don't have any commercial this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't.
Let's run the music,
unfortunately.
Shall we?
Yeah, okay. That sounds good.
Because I'm getting yelled at that we need a producer.
No, who's telling you that?
Bubble Genius.
What? Oh, come on. That's, see, now the key to this show. Now, see, I take issue with it. The key to this show is spontaneity. You never know what we're going to do next.
That's what I said. I said, hey, I run my mouth. Bob runs his mouth. That's how it works.
Yeah. As we get to sort of the belly of the show. Well, I mean, the only thing that's the same about the show is the beginning of the show, the commercials, and the end of the show.
Yeah, everything else in between is a crapshoot.
Right, and I
grab
put
ass.
Grab ass is exactly right. See, we would be horrible, you know, applying our manner of doing this show to actually govern anything. See, if we got to govern something, we get our shit together. Well, then we get a producer.
Yes. Yeah, I would hope so.
We'd have a chief of staff like Leo McGarry or something to keep us on track.
Yeah.
It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show, which is another thing I keep forgetting to say at the top of the show, but everyone knows what show it is. You can see it right there on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show, brought to you exclusively by www.bubblegenius.com, the best goddamn soap ever made in the world. And we got some really great soap this week from Bubble Genius. It was shaped like a candy, and it's like a heart-shaped box of candies. And you know what they were? They were soap, yes. And I only discovered that after I ate some. No, I'm kidding.
No, you did not.
I did not. I'm kidding. It was, you know what they
that
were?
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been great. They were bonbon bonbons.
Bonbon bonbons.
That's what the label
pizza.
Said. Yeah. They were they were soapy bonbon bonbons.
Pizza.
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 Pork cylinders. Birthday pie.
Sandwich casserole.
Large Macs. Egg and ham slabs.
Bonbon bonbons.
Hoisin Crispy Owl. Mystery meats. Quiches Lorraine. Anything goes.
Saturday is treat day.
Saturday is your treat day. Peter Serafinowicz, thank you.
Thank you.
The fuel that runs this show is that one Peter Serafinowicz sketch. The Butterfield diet plan. Anyway, Bubble Genius sent us bonbons. We haven't tried the bonbons here yet, but we will. We're still going through the hibiscus soap, which is actually my favorite Bubble Genius soap. It's still Women's History Month, by the way.
It is?
Yeah. I've got several soaps in honor of Women's History Month. I'm Your Venus, the Paleolithic Venus of Willendorf on a rope, red and smelling of juicy pomegranate. We've been talking here, my girlfriend and I, talking about like what the point is of the rope. Do you know, are you aware of the soap on the rope? And I'm just trying to figure out what the rope is all about.
No.
Because it kind of just gets in the way. Mm-hmm. But it's good. It's good to have it because then what we discovered is that you can hang it on stuff.
Right.
You can hang it on your...
Like each
on
other.
Your, yeah, yeah. Each other. You can hang it on the shower head and just like dangle it there. And so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't sit in that disgusting soap tray.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Or it could be used for handy extraction if you get it lost somewhere.
you have experience with losing your soap somewhere?
No. Well, actually, I do, but not where you think.
Oh.
I've actually lost my soap in my peritoneal cavity, in my stomach.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but that's another story. We'll tell that when the Bubble Genius music is no longer playing.
Okay. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Bum, 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 bums. That was so great. I flipped it over, looked at the label, and it said bum, 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 bums.
Did it really?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, that's awesome. I haven't gotten my candy-shaped soaps.
Nope. Have you, and you've actually checked the scent of your Bob and Elvis soap, right?
Uh-huh. It's delicious.
It smells like weed.
Yes, it does. It
smells like weed.
So yeah, I when they finally let me out of the hospital with my appendix 6 weeks after I checked in, and 70 pounds lighter and just a fucking disaster. The day they checked me out, I said, aren't you forgetting something? And they said, what's that? And I said, well, I've got this horrendous 10-inch horizontal scar going across my abdomen area, and there's nary a stitch in it. You have not sewn me up, sir.
And oh my
God. Doctor said, that's correct. We're going to discharge you with an open wound. And I said, douchebag says what? What? Yeah, it was because the risk of reinfection was so high. They didn't, which seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? They didn't sew me up.
That's really gross, because then you'd be walking around, there'd be like flies accumulating.
Yeah, low flies, maggots and shit.
Oh, God. That's really disgusting.
It was pretty bad, yeah. But, you know, so 3 times a day, they gave me this fucking gasoline juice, this hydrogen peroxide stuff, basically, that it was like dark orange. It's like the stuff they swab you with before they cut you open. That stuff. But it was really literally, I mean, imagine just sawing into your arm with a razor blade, salting it, and then pouring, you know, gasoline on it. It's what it felt like every day. And I had to do it 3 times a day.
Oh, nice.
So in the shower, I had to, you know, literally pull my stomach open. You know, it would separate like a mouth, like this giant maw, God. And I would spray this stuff in the gash, in this 10-inch scar, and stuff would come out, and then it would wash away, and it looked like Psycho in the shower every day.
Like maggots.
Yeah, no, because no, during the day I had it, you know, seal itself up sort of. It would make this horrible kind of sound when I would pull it open. But, you know, I would have it taped together with surgical 4x4s. I had to make this really clever apparatus to see, you know, to keep it closed. But I did lose a bar of soap.
God, that's awful.
I swear to God, it's the truth. And it would very, very gradually from the edges, you know, from the hip, from my hip on the right and from my hip on the left, it very steadily started to grow back together by itself. the worst thing, here's the worst part. When I was in the hospital, the most pain that I went through in that six weeks where I had 4 major surgeries, really just almost died in the second one. I spent a week in the serious place with, you know, the room with the big nurse's station looking
intensive,
right at you.
Intensive care.
Intensive care, yes. Yeah. ICU, yes. Yeah. I just really literally almost bought it because I was just so full of toxin and infection. But the worst part, they had to sew this rubber T tube. It's like a tube shaped like a T, right?
Yeah.
They had to sew that inside the incision so that they didn't have to open it and close it every time to wash me out, to irrigate it. So this T went up towards my, you know, chest and down the other way, and they would put this. Here's the trick: if you ever have a T tube, tell the nurse to squeeze the air out of that fucker first, because I had a trainee who didn't know that.
Right.
And basically, they get a turkey baster, literally one of those medical turkey basters, this great big tube with a bulb on it, and they suck up this brown, horrible gasoline stuff,
right.
And they cram it one end into that tube, and they irrigate you. And she forgot to squeeze the air out, and she put this fucking thing in there, you know, cram the turkey baster down in the end of the tube that's hanging out of my gut, and she leaned on that bulb, and I mean, I thought I was gonna fucking explode.
Oh my God!
I grabbed her wrist and clawed the shit out of it. I mean, I broke. I made her bleed because I had these, you know, fucking Mr. Burns fingernails because I had been in the hospital forever. I had, you know, I couldn't move. I was just so such a mess. But man, that hurts so fucking bad.
Yeah, we have sound of that. Here's what it sounded like. Yeah, I hope no one's eating dinner while listening to the show today.
Enjoy. Yeah.
It's funny because we play. You're like Mr. Burns. You are Mr. Burns. He had every disease known to man.
No, I had peritonitis. It's a killer. I mean, if you get peritonitis, you are more than likely going to fucking die. And I had it hard. And it wasn't until they brought in this like nuclear glow in the dark antibiotic. Mm-hmm. Like they brought it in with like clamps, you know, and like the rubber gloves, the big heavy black shiny rubber gloves, and they're like, oh, and it's glowing and it's got the little nuclear, you know, the little hazardous waste sign on it. Okay. And they plug it into my IV, and I had IVs going in everywhere. I had this triple thing going into my collarbone, one's like a main line right into your heart in case they've got to literally attach you to a blood machine.
Jesus.
I had a pipe coming out of my, you know, a stomach tube coming out of my nose, had a line in my right arm, a line in my left arm. There's still parts of my hip, my right hip, that I can't feel, that feel like Novocaine because I had so many shots every day, just directly into my hip, that just never came back.
Yeah.
But they attached this nuclear green glow in the dark antibiotic, and the next day I was fine. The next day I was like, hey, let's go. And before that, my doctor was like, dude, you're just going to die. He was just so – and they were getting ready to fit me for a colostomy bag. Yeah. I mean, I was a fucking wreck. There was just no motion in my ocean below my rib cage. I mean, I was just a disaster. And they put me on this stuff, and I got better like the next day. And that was a military hospital, socialized medicine.
There you go.
Saved my life.
There you go.
Fort Belvoir, Virginia.
Socialism.
Socialism at its best.
It was like in that Mr. Burns episode where he's actually diagnosed with every disease in the world. They explain that all of the diseases cancel each other out.
Yeah, right.
So he thinks I'm indestructible. Yeah. And he continues out.
What the hell happened to that show?
Oh, God.
I don't even watch it anymore.
I don't either.
I don't even watch it anymore. That's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been on for so fucking long. It's just not edgy and... Like every episode in the eight, when Conan O'Brien was driving that car.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah.
Every episode, you're like, they did not say that.
Yeah.
They could not get away with that. And now it's just, oh, my God.
Well, you wonder, much like peak oil, think, are they going to get to a point, and I'm speaking more broadly of all comedy, television comedy.
Yeah.
Are they going to get to a point where there's peak comedy? I know South Park, I think, did an episode where, you know, the joke was that The Simpsons did it first.
Yeah.
Like, The Simpsons has done every joke already.
Right.
Like, The Simpsons has used up all of the comedy, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Arrested Development was so funny because it was so different, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like a documentary-style comedy.
Yeah.
And the writing was so painfully good that, I mean, I still can watch that show, especially first season.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, the first... 8 episodes of the first season.
Yeah.
And there's jokes in there that I've totally missed. Mm-hmm. Lines that I completely missed because I'm laughing so hard at the one before it. You know,
that's right.
It's just so rapid fire and so unbelievably brilliant. You got to do something like that now to be funny.
Yeah.
To get on the radar. There's a new show on called Raising Hope. I don't know if you've seen it. Raising Hope with Martha Plimpton. And it's really, really funny. It's by the guys that did My Name is Earl.
Oh, really?
Which I always thought was a really good show.
Yeah, you know, there's another show. There's a family show on ABC that I forget what it's called, but I've seen a bit of it. And what I saw was actually kind of clever.
Modern Family.
What is it called?
Modern Family.
Modern Family. Like I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's actually very clever and funny. But it's just a family. But I guess it doesn't need to be anything more than that to be funny. But, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, I really miss... comedies that break out beyond that sort of family dynamic, like Cheers was I think Cheers was kind of a family, but it wasn't literally a family.
Right. But it was a, you know, any revolving ensemble, you know, the same, you know, you had Coach, who was kind of the grumpy old dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, every character was just so perfectly defined. And so unique in and of themselves. Yeah. I mean, I love watching Toy Story with Peanut. And that Ham character that John Ratzen, you know, the Cliff guy, plays is so just Cliff.
Yeah.
You know, he knows everything about everything. I just love that character has just sort of gone on to be Ham in Toy Story.
That's right.
It's just one of these is a character that never dies, Cliff Clavin. A brilliant character.
Who, by the way, you know, might not shock you to learn that, you know, John Ratzenberger is a wingnut.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He and Kelsey Grammer are both wingnuts.
Yeah, that's such a shame. You see, you'd think Kelsey Grammer's smarter than that, but he's so loaded. I guess when you're that rich, you just kind of have to be a wingnut.
Yeah, you wonder if it's just all about the taxes.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Of course it is. course it is. You can't tell. Yeah, it absolutely is.
But it pisses me off because, you know, you get to that level of wealth. I mean, if you got Cheers money, for God's sake. Yeah. I mean, those guys were earning $1 million an episode in the 90s, in the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now they're making syndication money.
Yeah.
Which is the real money.
Just huge money. Yeah.
Oh, just, I mean, it's on 50 times a day all over the fucking world, and they're just getting drowned in residual checks and just big, big money.
Well, they can afford accountants to find them loopholes and tax shelters. This is my thing. Sure, you know. Shit. So, I mean, if John Ratzenberger and Kelsey Grammer are paying 35% marginal tax rate as their effective tax rate, they're fucking stupid.
They're all these guys are corporations unto themselves. It's the, you know, toss salad and scrambled eggs corporation or whatever. Yeah. Kelsey Grammer's, you know, they're all just corporations and the, you know, mailboxes in Aruba.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Did you see that video of Stephen King at a Florida rally the other day?
No.
Where they were rallying and he got up and said, he basically said, Stephen King, you know, he's one of the richest guys in the fucking world.
Not Stephen King, the
author.
That's right.
And he basically got up and said, look, I'm richer than fuck, and I'm not getting taxed enough. He said, why am I not getting taxed at 50%?
Yeah.
And he made a point to say that he and Tabitha purposefully give back. You know, he gets taxed at like 28 or whatever it was, and they give back. They figure out what the difference is, what they think they should be taxed, and they take that off the top and give to schools and libraries and cops and veterans. I thought that was just so big of him.
Yeah.
I mean, just so awesome. That, you know, there's just a point where how much money is enough, you know? I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
How much – what – it just makes me so mad.
Yeah, well, you know, they simply don't know what they're talking about anymore, the Republicans. And yeah. You know, this week, I mean, there have been so many things. I mean, first let's get back to the list here. I mean, Newt Gingrich. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Newt Gingrich yesterday, one of the most remarkable displays of audacity.
Yeah. I don't even know where he's going with Republicanism.
Yeah, I mean, he told CBN, again, CBN sort of becoming the, you know, Wingnut, I don't know what,
Central.
Wingnut Central. Yeah. I mean, so he's
Christian Broadcast Network, CBN.
Right. He's being asked about his marriage infidelities. Mm-hmm. And so he says, there's no question at times of my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard and things happened in my life that were not appropriate. So basically, this is the America fuck yeah excuse for cheating on your wives.
Yeah. Unprecedented. Right?
Unprecedented, yeah. Is right.
And not just cheating, but twice he's divorced sickly wives, like wives that, you know, were in hospitals or, you know, really falling apart health-wise. Twice. I mean, that's pathological. There's something really seriously wrong in his brain.
Yeah.
To have this syndrome where the moment his wife, it's like some kind of weird evolutionary tiger thing where, like, if you know, the weak and lame, they just gotta go. You gotta go get you another one. As soon as they've gone weak and lame, you gotta suit up and get another one.
Yeah.
God help this Stepford wife he's with now. If she gets, you know, a cyst on her hoo-ha, then it's all over.
Yeah. I mean, it not only that, but I mean, you know, when he gets on and starts talking about, you know, family values and God and everything like that and forgiveness, it just, it makes him look so, Chris Matthews was calling it a circus.
Yeah.
He's like a circus clown.
Yeah. No one takes him seriously. No one. Not even the Republican base anymore.
Yeah.
He's a caricature of himself. He's so 1990 something.
Mm-hmm. But he's going to be the first one to declare his candidacy for president. He's going to be the first one out of the chute. Because I think what he's counting on is that it's going to be his turn. Because that's how the Republicans choose their candidates. Whoever's turn it is, they go next.
He's not doing well in the straw polls.
No, he's not.
And he does abysmally poorly against Obama in swing states and with independents.
Can you imagine that? Sorry I cheated on you. I'm just so fucking patriotic.
Yeah.
I just
America.
Love that.
Woo!
Love that flag.
Man, that's a great excuse.
So, just, you know, I got to bang. I got to go.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. I love my country so much. It's like Glenn Beck. Like, he excuses all of his crazy conspiracy theories that, by the way, he works from Alex Jones. And he excuses it by saying, I just love my country.
Yeah, I just love my country. Love it so much.
I just love it so much. I had a fear for it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they, for so long, they used patriotism as an excuse for really, really, really awful things. Mm-hmm. And now they're admitting it.
I've never seen them use patriotism as a crutch for fucking some other woman, though. I swear to God, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
It's just unbelievable. Like that, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country.
Yeah. He's just so wrapped up in governing, in the contract for America.
I was saluting the flag. You know, I was out there just tears rolling down my cheeks, humming the national anthem, and my dick fell into that woman.
Yeah.
I just couldn't help myself.
I tripped on my copy of the Constitution and accidentally fucking stepped on my wife.
That's right.
Just happened to be his aide, wasn't she? Didn't she work for him?
Yeah.
This most recent one?
Yeah. I was down on the mall, and I fell over the ledge of the Vietnam Memorial, and my penis just fell into some woman's mouth.
Yeah. As will happen.
As will happen often at the Vietnam Memorial.
Who hasn't that happened to, really? You know, you go, you're walking up the steps of the Capitol and you're marveling at this great institution of democracy and you accidentally fuck some stepper. You know, you're just so caught up in the patriotism. You're at the archives and you're looking at the Constitution and oh no, you
oh
accidentally,
God.
You know.
Oh my, is my penis in you? Jesus, sorry. I was sorry. I wanted to look at the Declaration of Independence under that glass, and my penis just fell into you. Sorry.
I accidentally caught up in my patriotism and fucked you in the ear. Sorry. That'll happen.
Yeah, just wandering around, staring up at the Spirit of St. Louis or the Air and Space Museum. Well, you know.
Humming Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Humming Yankee Doodle Dandy. And then, whoops, sorry. Oh God. Sorry. I guess I've
got to marry you now.
Yeah. Well, first I got to go divorce my wife who's recovering from cancer surgery.
Yeah.
And this guy is going to run for president. It's unbelievable that he's not off on some island, like abandoned island, like Castaway, huddled under a rock, just out of sheer embarrassment.
Yeah. He's got no... Whatever the gene is for self-awareness and embarrassment and shame, they just don't have it. Yeah. None of them do. Because the news cycle is just too... I mean, no one remembers that shit.
Yeah.
But the Family Values Lobby, I mean, the guys you need in Iowa and New Hampshire and early on, the base, they won't buy that shit. They look unkindly at Newt. Seriously. I mean, yeah. It's just not going to happen. So, I'm cheering all of this... radicalism and all of this douchery. I just want more of it. What would scare me right now in the process is a serious-minded, fiscally responsible, socially moderate, you know, conservative. That would scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
That, you know, that might have a chance of winning. All of this radical teabagger nonsense, I love. It's just bring it on. More, 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 please.
Yeah.
Peter, Steve King, more, more, more. Please.
Yeah.
Just keep it coming.
What they're doing is that I still believe that they looked out and they saw some of these crowds. And it's the first time that conservatives have actually seen large crowds of protesters. Yeah. And they mistakenly took that as being that this is going to be a massively electable movement.
No.
They've mistaken the crowd size for actual electoral support. And it's just not. It's incongruous. Those two things do not match. You know, they're just so keyed up by the, wow, we've got big crowds and they've got crazy signs and they're saying lots of things. We need to get on board with this. And it's nonsense. It's actual nonsense.
No, it's not, you know, none of it's going to get any national traction. They've, like I said, run a moderate, find a middle of the road guy. Like, I mean, Romney's a hairdo and he's a flip flopper and he's, you know, that's not going to play well, but it's really the only chance of nationwide electability. And otherwise who they got? It just give me more radicals, please. Mm-hmm. More radicals.
Here's Pete King.
Peter King is who I've been meaning all night.
Peter King.
Yeah. Not Steve King. Steve King's from fucking Iowa.
Well, Steve King's even crazier than Peter King.
He is. That guy's fucking crazy. And I'm fixated on him because he's local, you know, he's around here.
Yeah. Steve King is just about as batshit as you get. I mean, Steve King actually makes Michelle Bachman seem, you know, rather mainstream.
Yeah. Peter King is who
Peter
he is.
Peter King. Peter King with this inquisition against Muslim Americans. This Islamophobic you know, witch
hunt.
He's
definitely this week's candidate for cancer in the dick hole.
Right.
Every week the Bob and Elvis show nominee for cancer in the dick hole is Peter King.
Wins the cancer in the dick hole prize for this week.
Yes. We should have little statuettes made.
And maybe a little sound. I'm trying to think. Maybe this, like,
"You dick."
That's as close as I get to something dick oriented.
"You dick."
Cancer in the dick hole. He's got to understand somewhere in it. I mean, he's another one of these guys. You just look at him and he just looks stupid. I mean, he just looks like he should be plunging my toilet or snaking my septic tank, you know, with his ass hanging out and a stained T-shirt. He just looks like a dummy.
Yeah.
But something somewhere, he's got to have a staffer. There's got to be somebody around him that can say, "Dude, this is just more harm than good, man. What the fuck?" I don't understand how they can live in such a bubble that it seems like a good idea to go after the very community that we need to not alienate the most, the sort of quiet Muslim American community that just wants to be American and get by and raise their kids and not be stared at weird.
That's right. So let's just preface
this is about.
That's right. Let's just preface this with this NPR story. Ron Schiller is caught on tape by James O'Keefe. Yeah. This lying flim-flam artist who's in cahoots.
You and I are
going to
disagree on this case, though.
Well, you know, this guy, Ron Schiller, says that the Tea Party and the Republicans are driven by xenophobia, race baiting, and things like that, which is true. Which is true. Yeah. It's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
But he shouldn't have said it. He shouldn't be thinking it from a... NPR is a very special animal. It's a very unique thing. It's a publicly funded, and I mean, you know, and I, hey, every time they have a fundraiser, I get my tote bag, I get my coffee cup, I chip in because they make me feel guilty. And they go, "If you're enjoying this show and you're not paying for it, fuck you, liberal." You know,
so the head of the NPR Foundation is not allowed to have a private conversation over dinner in which he actually expresses his opinion. It's not like
he needs to watch his mouth. He needs to watch his mouth.
No matter where he goes. If he's having a private, which is what he thought he was doing, he was having a private conversation, and he was being goaded into responding in the affirmative. There was someone, because it was O'Keefe's shill, who said that the Tea Party was all about racism and xenophobia and everything like that. And what Ron Schiller did was he said, yeah. And this is a private dinner setting. He's not standing up in front of a group of people delivering a speech. He's not, you know, he's not typing up position papers and memorandum to the staff saying, you know what, they're all about xenophobia like Fox News does. He's having a private conversation. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. He's just expressing his personal opinion. And that's the case. That's where conservatives get it wrong about this liberal media bias. They automatically assume, because a lot of journalists are, you know, vote Democratic, that they're going to allow that to bleed into their professional lives, which isn't the case at all.
Well, let's not fool ourselves. NPR is absolutely a liberal thing. I mean, it's like Sully ran the headline, you know, "This just in, NPR, a liberal network." Well, no duh. I mean,
well,
it has, and I listen to it almost exclusively. I mean, I don't listen to music. I've always got NPR on, and, you know, but, you know, the feature shows they have, like All Things Considered and Fresh Air and those things, they don't have a discernible liberal bias. Fresh Air, shows like that, tend to have guests on that lean more left or have more liberal views. But I mean, the news coverage is second to none, as far as I'm concerned. No news institution had more foreign correspondents overseas on 9/11 than NPR. NPR had more foreign correspondents in more foreign places than any other news outlet, CNN, MSNBC, anybody. Mm-hmm. On 9/11, nobody had more than NPR. So, but let's not fool ourselves. It is a liberal operation.
Insofar as the facts have a well-known liberal bias.
Oh, liberal bias. Well, yeah. My point is, look, if any amount of your funding, if any dollar, any decimal point of your funding comes from federal taxes, from public troughs. You need to zip your fucking mouth. I don't care who you're talking to about your own personal political biases or opinions, because that there is, I can't think of another program that like that, that, and I'm sure there are plenty, but the point is, I can see Red America, Red Meat Teabag America, having a legitimate beef with, even if it's, you know, and it is like 2 cents in their monthly federal tax. I mean, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing what they take out of that. But it's still, to me, shut up. Just zip your mouth. Don't, it's unnecessary that you should be absolutely completely middle of the, you know, just no comment, no comment, no comment.
Even if you're having a private conversation.
Yeah.
So if you work for NPR, you are, it's verboten at any point in time in your personal life, regardless of what you're doing, to actually say, hey,
he didn't know these
what?
Guys well enough. If he's getting gained by monkey fucks like O'Keefe and his team, then he didn't know these people at his private whatever well enough to be running his mouth about politics, period. If I don't care how they misrepresented themselves, they were playing Fletch, basically, put on a pair of fake teeth to get in the door and pretend you're somebody else and get somebody to tell you something. That's investigative reporting. That's some legitimate – I mean, that's just how you get it done. If they had gone in and said, hey, we're James O'Keefe and our, you know, gang of monkey fucks, that he wouldn't have said a word. But they lied to get in the door. That's how you got to do it. He didn't know them well enough to be talking like that. Sorry. He obviously didn't know who he was talking to well enough to get into that.
So he should
have zipped it up.
Now, is there any indication then that NPR is covering the Tea Party as being racist? I mean, I don't know
if they are or not. I don't know.
I mean, that's what I mean. There's a very thick wall between a lot of liberal journalists and how they report. There's a dividing line there. And in fact, what we all know to be true now is that they're so self-conscious about this liberal media bias in quotes
that they go the other way,
that they're actually much more supportive of the right way. And we can even look at a couple
ginning up these false equivalencies.
Ginning up false equivalencies, the both sides meme. You go back a couple of weeks ago, you know, out of 14 guests on the Sunday shows, only 4 were Democrats. And one of those wasn't even a real one. It was like, you know, Kent Conrad, who's hardly a Democrat.
Yeah. No, I've never that I know, that I remember, I've never really witnessed NPR engaging in that sort of both sides bullshit. And I don't think they go out of their way to present the right side, the far right side of any issue. I'm just saying that in this particular case, you got to know if you're in that kind of position and your funding, it's some portion of your funding is public monies. You need to just be more careful and you need to be more nonpartisan. If it's a private conversation with your wife's best friends and you're all, you know, sitting around your luxurious dinner table sipping sherry and giggling at each other, then yeah, that's fine. No, and if somebody broke into the house and camera phoned it, you know, from underneath the table, that's one thing. But this wasn't if there's somebody there that you don't know if you're being punked by James O'Keefe and you're running your mouth like that, you're an idiot, period. That, I don't care if it's a private function. You don't know this person well enough to take him or her into that kind of confidence. So that's my point. It was careless and foolish if some portion of your money, of your funding, comes from the federal government. You got to take that into account. You need to zip it.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it's stupidity notwithstanding. I mean, you get duped by James O'Keefe, you're stupid. But there's two things here that I want to relate to James O'Keefe and this NPR business as being the centerpiece of, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it right after the Bubble Genius here.
Okay.
And today's show, as always, exclusively sponsored by www.bubblegenius.com. And they didn't have a commercial today, by the way. It's not like I skipped over their commercial. There's no official Bubble Genius commercial this week, so we're just...
They've been busy.
Yeah. As with everything that we do, which is completely unproduced and unscripted.
Obviously.
We're winging it. That's exactly right. So, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, it's coming up. They've got the Erin Go Bath Whipped Body Wash, or as they say in the commercials, Whipped Body Wash.
Whipped.
Whipped. Deliciously chocolate minty. There's that guy who used to be in the Smucker's commercial. He used to say, it was a butter commercial or something. He used to say, rich, creamery butter. Whipped butter. I forget what the commercial that was, what product that was. Deliciously chocolate minty green, of course, with teeny green jojoba beads for scrubby delight. And moisturizing. Go for the green. Magically delicious. Something, something, something.
Don't eat it.
Don't eat the little jojoba beads.
Don't eat it.
Don't eat it. They're not edible. But they look delicious. Like my bonbon soap.
Bonbon bonbon.
I mean, literally, if you're not buying your soap from Bubble Genius, you're stupid. It's literally, I'm now insulting you. If you don't buy Bubble Genius soaps and stock your house with Bubble Genius soap, you're an idiot. Because it's the best goddamn soap in the world. It's handmade. It's vegan. It's totally vegan. You know, they do these theme months with, you know, it's Women's History Month. They've got several Venus-shaped soaps. Mm. You know?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Venus?
Venus, yes. Not sorry, not...
Just made a dick joke.
Colin Firth penises. No, sorry. Oh, sorry, Elvis.
Why? why can't I have my Colin Firth-shaped penis?
Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable, even the shrink wrap protecting your soap, or reusable, like their tins. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and...
Surfactants!
It's Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, were you doing the bubble noise?
I just like to pop my mouth that way sometimes.
Oh, okay. Because we do not have the bubble noise this week because we did not have an official Bubble Genius commercial. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I use this stuff. I mean, I've got a big variety of Bubble Genius soaps just stuffed in the closet, in the little medicine cabinet in the bathroom. And then we just wheel out, you know, we've got the hibiscus soap at the sink. You know,
yep.
for hand washing, there's one of their fleur-de-lis soaps is dangling from its beaded rope in the shower. They got also one of the heart-shaped soaps from Valentine's Day. You know, it's shaped like one of those heart candies. And it smells really good, and then it's got a double kick because the second smell after the initial odor is like is almost like a smoky scent. So, this is handmade stuff. It's the best in the world. Literally, the best damn soap in the world. Bubble Genius. Go look at Bubble Genius and buy their stuff as gifts for yourself, for your dog, for everybody. So, there you go.
Buy some soap, you dicks. There. That's my commercial.
So Eric Cantor, speaking of dicks.
Oh, God.
Eric Cantor is actually buying into the O'Keefe bullshit. So much so that, I mean, here's how O'Keefe and Congress function. O'Keefe makes a video, which most of the time, I mean, most of the videos that O'Keefe has released with his, with his cohort, Andrew Breitbart, have been selectively edited. Breitbart has admitted that they selectively edit these things to make them look like something that they're not.
Yeah.
So then what happens is Congress watches these videos and they're outraged. They don't care that the videos are bullshit, that they're staged, that they're edited and truncated in a way that makes the subjects look guilty.
Yeah.
So Congress then defunds that program.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Acorn. So the O'Keefe and Breitbart, they do these Acorn videos with this pimp and this underage prostitute. They go in, they selectively edit the videos to make Acorn look like they're doing something illegal. Congress, the congressional Republicans step in. They defund Acorn. Acorn goes away. Acorn's done. There's no more Acorn. So, by the way, you hear a Republican bitching about Acorn as being part of some grand conspiracy. Tell them to fuck themselves because there is no more Acorn. Acorn does not exist. Why? Because of James O'Keefe and a series of videos, which Andrew Breitbart has admitted were bullshit.
Yeah.
He admitted publicly. He stood up in front of a microphone, in front of a whole group of people. There's audio of it. There's a transcript of it where Andrew Breitbart says, this stuff, we did this just to get attention.
Yeah.
That's why he did
it. But it doesn't, yeah. The retraction never matters as much as the actual,
that's right,
you know, lie. I mean, it doesn't, so yeah, it's criminal. I mean, the kind of work that Acorn did, and hopefully it'll just form itself under a different name, kind of like Blackwater did with Z or whatever the fuck it calls itself now. But the kind of work it did was absolutely crucial to democracy, and it no longer exists, at least in that form. So it's criminal. James O'Keefe should major cancer in the dick hole. I mean, real hard, serious cancer in the irony of this is that I will probably soon be suffering from cancer of the dick hole.
Oh no.
You dick.
There's no cancer in the dick hole.
That's probably how I'm gonna go.
So then the same thing happened with Planned Parenthood. You know, James O'Keefe gets together with this other organization, Right to Life organization. They go in, they do selectively edited videos that show, you know, Planned Parenthood people saying untoward things, unsavory things. Turns out to be bullshit, but they release them anyway. Then Congress defunds Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Right. Fortunately, that budget bill died.
Yeah.
You know, it was voted down in the Senate, which is irrelevant because there's going to be another form of it that's going to pop up.
Oh, sure.
You know, and all this budget battle that's happening, which we really ought to be paying more attention to.
Yeah.
By the way. So Planned Parenthood hasn't lost its funding like Acorn has yet, but of course the House of Representatives voted to strip Planned Parenthood of all of its funding. And and none of that funding actually funded abortions. It was for, you know, pap smears, STD prevention, birth control, things that are necessary for women to live.
To plan their parenthood.
Right. Right. It had nothing to do with abortion.
Manage their bodies.
Because as we all know, it's illegal for federal money to go towards, you know, abortions.
And that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Well, I don't know.
I don't need a lot of federally funded abortions. I mean, you need an abortion, you get your own funding behind it. Yeah. I mean, just keep it legal. I mean, that's my bottom line. We don't need to fund it, but keep it legal. Mm-hmm. Keep it safe and clean and functioning.
So now they do this with NPR. And now, you know, Eric Cantor gets up, again, publicly embracing James O'Keefe, a James O'Keefe product.
Yeah.
Yeah, knowing.
Really just clueless. Either knowing or clueless. I mean, one or the other. He's either just unbelievably disingenuous or just unbelievably stupid. But one or the other of those, and that's, you know, who wants that in a congressman?
Yeah. So, I mean, here's Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader,
endorsing
the work of a known scam artist.
Yeah.
A known scam artist, an admitted scam artist.
Yeah.
Oh,
second most powerful Republican in America.
Yeah.
Behind Boehner.
And so Ron Schiller says that the Republicans are driven by xenophobia and race baiting and so forth. And then and he's all kinds of demonized, right? The CEO, another person with the last name Schiller, coincidentally
enough.
Yeah,
that's weird.
She resigns from NPR, too, over all of this. Okay? So obviously at this point, NPR is damaged.
Yeah.
So, and because Ron Schiller told the truth.
Yeah.
Because he told the truth. And how do we know that he told the truth? Well, there are a number of examples. But most recently, this inquisition, this Islamophobic inquisition by Peter King.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's attacking Muslim Americans and holding these hearings to try to determine, you know, if there's Muslim Americans who are trying to overthrow the government or, you know, commit acts of terrorism. When in fact, you know, more than twice the number of terrorist attacks are perpetrated at the hands of non-Muslims.
Yeah.
Twice.
They're
as
like number 11. They just did this whole report where they listed like the top 10 threats to home security, from radical groups.
Yeah.
And Muslims were number 11. Right. They didn't even make the top 10.
That's exactly right. Here's the Think Progress piece. Yet as a January 2011 terrorism statistics report compiled using publicly available data from the FBI and other crime agencies from the Muslim Public Affairs Council shows, terrorism by Muslim Americans has only accounted for a minority of terror plots since 9/11. a minority of terror plots since 9/11. Since the attacks on the Twin Towers and Pentagon, Muslims have been involved in 45 domestic terror plots. Meanwhile, non-Muslims have been involved in 80 terrorist plots, 80 terrorist plots. In fact, right-wing extremists and white supremacist attacks alone outnumber plots by Muslims.
Oh, yeah.
Both groups being involved in 63 terror plots, 18 more plots than Muslim Americans have been involved in. So 63 out of those 80 are white, right-wing extremists and white supremacists.
Yeah.
Right. Including this week, we discover that Martin Luther King parade terrorist, that attempted terrorist attack on that Martin Luther King parade.
Yeah. National Alliance.
But a weapon of mass destruction. I mean, they're actually using the term weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah. Yeah. They fucking soaked shrapnel in rat poison.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
He was a right-wing
36-year-old Kevin William Harpum, and he's a member of the National Alliance. It's another one of these goddamn Elders of Zion kind of – that stupid book that douche wrote. Just a total white supremacist Nazi asshole.
Yeah.
And he's soaking shrapnel in fucking rat poison.
Right. Far right.
Yeah, but those go so under the radar because it's whitey. So, you know, he's just got to be a crazy lone gunman kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He just, you know, it's just that's just an abomination. No. He's read all the books. He's been to the websites. I'm on the Southern Poverty Law Center newsletter thing. I'm a member, like I'm a dues-paying member of the SPLC. And you wouldn't believe the white supremacist stuff that's going on every day. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are so organized. They got lives online. Like, I mean, they do websites and chat boards, just literal neo-Nazis. And this guy, Peter King, is wants to hold every American Muslim's feet to the fire and get them to give up their next door neighbor.
Where are the hearings? I mean, if you've got twice as many occurrences and many of those being right-wing extremist plots, why not? Why are we having the hearings over white supremacist groups?
Right.
You know,
instead we're dragging all of these. I mean, because these guys are easy to find. The FBI knows who they are.
Yeah, they're all
the
ones online.
Go to these. Yeah. Why aren't we dragging them in and saying, okay, you whitey, you were on this white supremacist chat board the other day talking about all kinds of bomb making stuff. Come on in here and talk to Congress, and you know, let's put you under oath there, buddy. Where's that?
New Pew poll this week, further vindicating Ron Schiller. Pew finds that the only group who think Islam is more likely than other religions to encourage violence are conservative Republicans and Tea Partiers. Both groups overwhelmingly endorse this view, with two-thirds of each agreeing with it. By contrast, not even moderate Republicans as a group believe this. 46% support this view, while 47% oppose it. This view is also opposed by independents and the broader public at large.
Yeah.
So Republicans do think that Muslims are more likely than other religions to encourage violence, even though the numbers are exactly the opposite.
Yep.
Exactly the opposite.
At least in this country, yeah.
Yeah. With right-wing extremists embodying most of the terrorist plots in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the McCarthyism there?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't suit an ideology. That doesn't fit neatly into an ideological, you know. There's no witch hunt in your own social class there.
Yeah. On top of the statistic that Nate Silver came up with showing, you know, your odds of dying in an airborne terrorist attack at the hands of a Muslim terrorist are 1 in 10 million. Basically zero.
Matter.
You've got no chance, basically.
Yeah. No chance.
No chance of being killed by a terrorist in a plane.
Yeah, but it's the one thing that people are, you know, as they're driving to work, twittering via their BlackBerry, smoking a cigarette and eating a cheeseburger, it's, you know, they're worried about terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
Not worried about cardiovascular disease or crashing their car or lung cancer, you know, or the giant tumor growing in their brain because of the constant cell phone talking. It's, oh my God, a plane's going to crash into me because I'm so scary important.
Yeah. So... But we have to investigate Muslims because, you know, because Republicans, they're not xenophobic.
No. It's just Muslims.
No.
Yeah. That's, you know, Muslim equals terrorist. Muslim equals, you know, Islam equals evil.
That's not racist at all. No, that's not. Yeah. That's not intolerant. Not in the slightest. No, no, no. Damn Ron Schiller for
telling the truth.
Telling the truth.
In, still, in what he shut his mouth off in front of strangers. That's my point. Oh,
God. Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know. I, you know,
bigger responsibilities than that.
I mean, we don't even know. I mean, we're taking that at face value, by the way. That it was what it was and wasn't somehow selectively edited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the first thing, anytime James O'Keefe releases a video, everyone jumps all over it. You know, Congress is caught, you know, off with their heads.
Yeah.
Congressional Republicans defunding things. And, but you know, the history of this guy proves that he's a sham. He's a scam artist. And the first thing we ought to assume is that the videos are faked.
Yeah.
And then, yeah,
well,
we're taking
them
at face
value. When you're pointing it, when you've got an uncut video of somebody saying something, and that something is ideologically consistent with the person's job description. And that's the whole point of this. This is a non-shocker.
No, right? It's not ideological. Because what I've been trying to describe here for the last half an hour is that it's the fact. It's fact that the that the Republicans are into this shit.
Yeah.
It's not an opinion. You can't look at the numbers and say that, oh yeah, you know what? Peter King's really a good guy. He's just worried about. He's like Newt Gingrich. He just loves the country, so his dick falls into things.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. It's painting them all with the same brush. And I don't know if I'm going to get on the. I don't know if I can say with any degree of certainty that every Tea Partier, you know, and every conservative Republican is motivated primarily by racism and xenophobia. I mean, I don't know. There's plenty, you know, it's the logical fallacy where if everything is something, then something is.
Well, he wasn't saying that every Tea Partier was, he was just speaking in generalizations.
Yeah.
Which means broadly, this is what they're all about.
When you say the Tea Party is this and the Tea Party is that, I mean, that is every member of said party. I mean, it's the party.
Well, remember, so, he didn't say it. I mean, he said, you know, he was agreeing. He was going along with what the actor was doing, the James O'Keefe shill.
Yeah.
Who was saying in a really bad accent. And you know, Ron Schiller's going, uh-huh, yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, and then he said that there's a lot of xenophobia and racism in the Republican Party, which is fact, which is true. I mean, this is the side of the statistics is proving it. So
shouldn't have shut his mouth off. That's my position.
At private dinner. Okay, yeah.
Should've
so by the way,
it.
if you ever work in the media, or you work for, you know, a government agency, don't make sure not to express your opinions in what you think is a private dinner.
I will. In front of people I don't know. I don't say anything. Well, except on this show. I don't say anything in front of people I don't know that I wouldn't want to come back and bite me in the ass.
Yeah.
But that's just my normal day job talking. I'm very security conscious.
Yeah, well. It's a shame. You know, it really is.
It is a shame. Really is. I mean, James O'Keefe should be, you know, like hackers that aren't allowed to come anywhere near a fucking computer for 30 years. James O'Keefe should be, I want a lawsuit against Breitbart. You know, maybe that woman that worked for whatever that was, that woman that he outed with the bullshit tape. I want them to get sued and have to go to court and be sworn in and get on the record and on pain of perjury, you know, defend their bullshit. I mean, somebody's got to. There's got to be some way of curtailing this nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that illegal? Isn't it illegal to be recorded that way? I have no idea, but it seems like it would be.
Yeah, I don't know what the current law is about, but yeah, I mean, it used to be for journalists you had to make your subject. If you were recording someone, they had to be made aware of it in a private setting. I mean, if you're giving a public speech or something, you know, all bets are off. But if you're being recorded against your, you know, you don't know it, I think that's still fairly illegal.
Well, at least you'll agree. I think you'll agree with me when I say that no one should be fired or have to resign over this, which they already have. And and certainly NPR shouldn't be defunded over it.
Oh, hell no, for Christ's sake.
Okay.
I mean, Jesus Christ, if you can prove that government monies went to, you know, some illegal activity, again, it's a non-headline. Oh my God, NPR has a liberal bias. I mean, it's proving the already known. So unless you can prove that federal monies are going, you know, to programs that defraud or cheat or hurt or, you know, then fuck it. You got no legal basis for defunding.
Well, I mean, but let me go back to the whole idea of NPR with a liberal bias. I mean, what indication do we have that they have a liberal agenda, that they are furthering liberal policies?
I mean,
deliberately saying, okay, we're going to pursue this or that liberal policy. We're going to push universal health care and we're going to push social programs.
I think it's just, I mean, in this day and age, and I've only really liberalism has only really been on my radar for the last decade or so. But in the old days, it was probably much more liberal than the mainstream, because the mainstream has gone so hard to the right since Fox News. I mean, now it's just the antithesis of Fox News, and that by definition makes it liberal. So, I mean, I don't know that they're out there beating the hay for liberal causes on purpose, but just the fact that they exist in a nonpartisan, you know, in the vacuum created by Fox News, it makes them, I think, by default liberal. So, it's just a non-story. I mean, all of this is a non-story. It's like capturing it's like getting Bill Clinton on video saying he likes Big Macs. It's like, oh, doy. You know, there's just no there's no news there. There's no there. There's right. Nothing there. Gives a shit.
Yeah. Well, I have a hard time believing that any of it was wrong whatsoever.
I just think the guy should watch his mouth in company that he, you know, in strange company.
Yeah, but I mean, all he was saying is something that's been proven time and time again by reality. It's not like he, you know, it's not like he was saying
much about facts and whatnot. They don't give a shit about that. I'm talking about the audience that we're talking. I'm talking about the Republic, the way that this has been spun. That's what you've got to watch. Not the reality of it. We all know the reality of it. I'm talking about the political downside running around.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, it's not like he was saying that Sarah Palin is a wingnut or that, you know, Newt Gingrich is
no,
lying.
No, he did worse than
he's
that.
Full
if
of
he
shit.
Do, if he can, that's. You know, that's subjective, but he lumped a bunch, you know, a political movement into one particular category, and that, you know.
Basically saying that, you know, the Republicans use the Southern strategy. Again, fact. Yeah. Fact.
Yep.
Fact. So if you were doing a hard news story about the Republican Party and their political campaign tactics, and you said that the Southern strategy was part of those tactics, is that fact or is that liberal bias?
It depends on who you're talking to. Depends on who you ask. I mean, facts, even these days, facts are suspect.
It's fact. Yeah. You would not be incorrect to report that. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. Fudge with us or fudge with the best. We'll be back next week, either on Thursday, Friday, one of those days next week.
Thank you.
With another hour and a half of improvised...
Unproduced improvised madness.
That's right. We'll see you then, everybody. Take care.
Au revoir.
You mean I have pneumonia?
Yes.
Juvenile diabetes?
Yes.
Hysterical pregnancy?
A little bit, yes.